Well, it's sure nice to have you back here on the Urantia Radio podcast. And we're talking about the revelation here. This time up, I want to introduce you to Ryan Herring, an independent filmmaker who has a grand plan using his talents to present the Urantia book through an innovative new way. In our conversation, Ryan explains cinematic translation and what it will take to get it from vision to reality. Creator of Fifth Epical Films, Ryan Herring joins us on this episode of the Urantia Radio podcast.
What does motion sound like? With Kizikans free shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
And welcome to another edition of the Urantia Radio podcast. My name is Jim Watkins, and I'm very happy to have on, I mentioned this last time, that we're going to have a gentleman on, Ryan Herring. Ryan Herring is someone you may have seen, you might even know him. He's from Washington, and he wants to produce movies, and we'll get into all the details about it, and he wants to start producing movies based on the Urantia book, which I think is a fantastic idea, and it kind of spurred my interest to reach out and find out what he's up to. So please welcome to the program, Ryan Herring. Ryan, are you in Port Angeles today?
I'm here at my house. I'm a real estate agent professionally. And actually I work from home.
So isn't that sweet? I mean, if there's one thing that came out of COVID, which there were not many things that came out, is that humanity, or at least Western society, decided, you know, I think it might be a possible solution to, you know, traffic. Because I was always worried, well, what's going to happen? Soon nobody's going to be able to get anywhere. And then COVID came along, and suddenly everybody's working from home. So maybe that'll do something to help, you know, slow down the deterioration of our environment. Who knows? But anyway, it's good to have you on. And I want to talk about a lot of things. First, when did you get to know the Urantia book? How did you find it? What was going on in your life? And tell us about that journey.
So I guess I discovered it in 1999, and I was 20 years old at the time, and I just was doing independent studies on my own into spirituality, and just really studying, trying to take a deeper dive into all different types of world religions.
And which ones did you try before you finally settled on the Urantia book? Or which ones did you like? There's a little bit of something in every one of them, you know, that's appealing.
So I guess if I roll back a little further, I was raised from time I was, well, before I can remember, until I was 14, and I chose to leave as a Jehovah's Witness. So
is that right?
Deeply schooled in Christianity, or a certain brand of it, I guess you could say, from a young age. So I was religious, and Jehovah's Witnesses, you know, they meet three times a week, and they go out and they do door-to-door evangelistic work on the weekends and evenings sometimes. So I was doing a lot of religious activities, I guess, when I was a youth. That's what I was brought up around. But then I sort of, you know, I got into, as a teenager, I guess, counterculture stuff, I guess you could say, skateboarding and snowboarding and, you know, just independent thinking. And it didn't really jive with the whole Jehovah's Witness thing. So
yeah,
I broke away as soon as I could when I felt like I was old enough to be independent. And it just sort of went my own direction. But I always had a deep spirituality.
Yeah.
I always had a interconnection with God, and so I always carried that with me. And as I got into my later teens, I had a lot of friends that were kind of neo-Rastafarians, I guess you could say, and I got kind of deep into that culture in my late teen years. And that really, and there was some, I had some friends that were pretty serious about it. You know, they were very, very spiritually minded too, although they were approaching it from, I guess, a unique and kind of odd angle, an obtuse angle, I guess you could say. But through that, I had some free time when I was 19, I was living at home, at my mom's house, I should say, still, and just working and sort of kind of breaking away from the social scene for a bit, doing my own thing. And so I branched out into just studying all different world religions.
Yeah.
And at that point, I was sort of already pretty open-minded, and obviously I knew Christianity, I knew the Bible, I'd already studied Buddhism a little bit and Hinduism a little bit and some other stuff. I had some friends that were into transcendental meditation and some other stuff. And actually how I discovered the Urantia book, I was reading in transcendental meditation, and I was reading some books by an author named Courtney Brown, Dr. Courtney Brown. And he has a type of transcendental meditation, which he terms remote viewing. And so he has written several books about this, and I was reading one of the books, and he talks about in one of the remote viewing sessions he contacted some midwayers, and he didn't say he was a Urantia book reader, really even familiar with it, but just mentioned in the book that this kind of fell in line with this book called the Urantia book. And I was just checking out books from the public library here in Port Angeles at the time. And so I was just sort of making my way through the whole religious spirituality section. And they had the Urantia book there. They had a copy of it. So I went back to turn that book in. I saw the Urantia book. I thought, whoa, that's weird. Maybe I should check this out. So anyways, I didn't – that's sort of where my studies ended. I picked up the Urantia book, and I delved deep into it, and I just kept studying it since then. So.
Did you read it from
really
the beginning?
It really answered all the questions that I had. Yeah, I did.
Yeah, so you read it from the beginning.
And I'm sort of a believer in the, you know, there's a part in chapter in paper 19 where they talk about the intentional reason why they present the information in the way they do, starting from, you know, from God, from the center, and going out to us and to our human history, instead of approaching it from what the human mind would first want to do, which is start with our history and sort of work our way out or inwards.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah, I always thought that was interesting too, you know.
And that is my guiding principle to my philosophy of studying the Urantia book. It always has been. That really struck a chord with me the first time I read it. And I'm also, you know, I don't know. I could go deep into it. I don't want to sidetrack too much.
No. I think this is, you know, we all
But that ties into what I'm trying to do.
Yeah.
Is really what I'm trying to do is not make films about the Urantia book. What I'm trying to do is what I dub a cinematic translation. And so that's a word accurate translation of the Urantia book into an audiovisual or cinematic format. So really what I'm trying to do is, if you can imagine the book, you have the written version of it. You can imagine the audiobook version that's out there, right?
Yeah.
So there's an audio version. What I'm trying to do is put an audio visual version out in its entirety, starting from the beginning, going to the end in order.
You know, I'm looking at the first section of the book, and I'm wondering how on earth does he get, I mean, why, you know, because let's look at some of the chapters, God the Father, the reality of God, God is a universal spirit, the mystery of God, and then you go into the Son and the nature of, the first five chapters of the book are about God. So how do you approach translating that cinematically?
Well, you have to be very creative, you know, and I have to say that I've had a lot of, I get skepticism from readers so far about my ideas, and most people, I think, get hung up on that part of it.
Yeah.
Some people say they don't like the idea of anybody trying to do that, even.
Really?
They like the picture in their own mind, and they don't want somebody ruining that by painting their own crude human picture, which I agree with philosophically in a way, but at the same time, that's like saying that, you know, cavemen shouldn't have started doing cave drawings because it was crude art, even though it was the first art.
If you're familiar,
I can't accept that. I can't accept the fact to say that that's wrong to try as humans. We have to try our best. And if this is the best we can do is a cave drawing, that's good enough. We should still do it.
I sat in on a conference call not long ago, and if you're familiar with Gary Tong's visuals, if it weren't for some of those visuals, it would have been a much harder time for me to comprehend Havona or the structure of the
central universe. Well, the fact of the matter is there's lots of proven studies on it, but it's far easier for anybody really to learn from an audio-visual presentation than it is from a text, from reading a text. It's just there's exponentially, you can learn more faster, more clearly, better. That's just a proven fact.
Now, any AI involved in this? That's a recent development. So this project that
I haven't really started production yet. I mean, I have to so I really want to do things in a high quality way and make this a legitimate production. And really, even if I had all the funds to start right now, it would take a lot of work assembling the right team. And even if we got into full production, what I'm aiming towards is producing about 12 papers a year, which kind of equates to about, it's about like what producing a big budget television show series would be. Like if you had a 12 episode, 1 hour long episode season of a television series you watched, and it came out once a year. That would be about the production schedule that I'm aiming for. And that's a lot. A lot of these big budget shows, Netflix shows, they only come out like once every 2-3 years because it takes them that long to produce 8 episodes, you know. So, and they spend, you know, millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars sometimes in their production. So, you know, it's an ambitious goal. And even at 12, like if you break it down, there's 197 papers I'm talking about, the forward and 196 papers.
Yeah.
So just do the math. How many years is that? It's a lot. It's over 20.
Yeah.
So this is it's an ambitious goal, to say the least. And I'm just trying to get the ball rolling because I think that it's a worthy effort to do, no matter who does it or who's involved or what it takes. And I think that having that... once it's done, having that material to stand beside the text. And I'm not saying to get rid of the text. I'm not saying there or the audio version or anything. I'm just, and other people, you know, I've had a lot of people, you know, say that they think what I'm trying to do represents mass marketing, which they're against. And I'm not trying to market it. If you talk to me, I don't have any plan to market this. I just want to make it available for free, just like the audio book version is, just like the textbook version is. And if actually I have a thesis I wrote on what a cinematic translation is, and really it's a translation. So this is copyrighted material. The Urantia Foundation owns the material. I'm going to give this to them when it's done, and they can distribute however they want, and I'm going to recommend free because I'm raising funds to do it through a nonprofit, and I'm not aiming to make any money off it. So but, you know, it's going to be their source material, just like the book is, just like the text. It's just another version of the same material. So that's the goal. I know it's kind of hard to understand. It's a little outside the box. I don't think so.
I'm
not a weirdo. I understand what I'm doing is a little out there. So.
You know, let me jump in here. You know, I would say in the 80s and the 90s and even the aughts, there was some apprehension of taking it slow and not going out there and doing things that would, and I think that is gone. I think that is the older generation of the people. It's sort of rooted in the culture of the Urantia book in the early days because there was initially such massive rejection of the book in 1955 that people actually kind of retreated. Well, maybe it's too soon for this world, right? But that's not the way it is now because we have so many tools at our disposal. And I see things on all the social media. I saw something today that I'm absolutely positively sure that the person who did it was probably a Urantia book reader. But that's the thing is if we don't introduce the book and use the tools, imagine if the, you know, the Melchizedek missionaries, if they had the tools that we have today, I mean, they would have to literally walk to India to share the teachings of Melchizedek. And they would do it. It would take them months and years and decades. But now we can circle the globe in minutes. I think that's an advantage. I'm not saying we need to mass market the book and put up billboards and all that. It's not about the numbers. It's about the fact that our society right now is going through a lot of turmoil, and something like the Urantia book would come and answer a lot of questions, which is one of the reasons we do this podcast, is because we want it to be out there. We want people to be introduced to it. If they're not introduced to it, the midwayers can't help us in bringing people into the tent. So tell me about, have you gone to Hollywood? Have you pitched anybody? Do you know anybody like some of the folks that read the Urantia book? I understand it's very popular now in Hollywood.
I don't really know for sure. I've studied into that a little bit, and I know I've seen a little, I've noticed, I guess what you call bleed into some popular culture from the Urantia book. Just incidentally and personally on my own. So I know that it exists, and actually there's, I forget his name, but there's a gentleman who's a Urantia reader who's actually, I think he's writing a book or working on writing a book about the Urantia book's influence on pop culture icons. And he talks about Jimi Hendrix, Gene Roddenberry, and some other really influential people. And I'm sure there's a lot more recent contemporary folks too. I listen to heavy metal music a lot. I work out. I grew up in that generation, like I said, snowboarding, skateboarding, so punk rock and all that. But one of my favorite bands, the Deftones, they have a song named Urantia. What does that tell you? Anyways, but all that aside, no, I haven't heard the. I haven't approached anybody yet. Like I said, this is a real soft launch. And my idea was to just try to first present it to the existing Urantia community to let people know what I was doing, even though, I don't have a long history of involvement with any Urantia communities. I've just been an independent reader.
Yeah, I'm like Woody Allen. Any club that would have me as a member, I probably wouldn't want to be a part of. That's what Woody Allen once said. I'm a solitary messenger. I'm a David Zebedee, not necessarily a John Zebedee. Tell me a little bit. Let's get into the visuals a little bit. So, keeping it as simple as possible, draw us a mental picture of what your first film might depict and your approach to making the cinematic translation. Tell us how that looks.
Well, I have a little video up on my website on the first page. First is my pitch video, and underneath it, there's a little sample video. So I guess that's as close as I could show at the moment. It's really short, but it's from the forward. And of course, I would start at the forward. Just my methodology and the way it would be great to produce the whole thing and just release it all at once, but because it would take so long, that's not really realistic. And I think it should be kind of released, like I would say, my plan would be release it like maybe in seasons, like maybe 10, 12 papers at a time, something like that.
Yeah.
But I would start at the beginning then, That being said, I would start at the beginning. So the first paper, the first film to be done, or episode, I guess is a more accurate way to term it, would be the forward. And so I have a little sample of the forward that I cut. And it's just what I call a rip reel. So I just went on YouTube. I didn't go out and shoot anything. I didn't spend any money making this. And actually, I cut that together like 2 years ago when I first came up with the idea to pitch this to the Urantia Foundation.
Yeah.
And so I just downloaded clips from YouTube of videos that I thought kind of fit the visuals of what I was going for. So it's just a crude sketch. If you look at that cinematic translation sample video, it's a director without any crew or money or anything, just sitting alone. It's like the equivalent of me sketching a crude sketch on a piece of paper so I could go in and show somebody, pitch a studio and say, here's what I'm trying to do. Here's a sketch of the idea of what I'm trying to do.
Yeah.
So, and that's the best I can do right now because I'm not a 3D artist. I don't have all the skills to do this. It's going to take a big team to put together even something really even representative of what I'm trying to do, because it's going to take, but I guess the closest I could say, I don't know if you've watched series like Our Planet, or there's a BBC series like Prehistoric Earth.
I know a lot of CGI might be involved I would think.
Exactly. So if you watch those series, that's what the production format that I'm going for.
Yeah.
So obviously it's narrator driven. So these earlier papers, obviously, so the narrators, the divine counselor that does the foreword and the first few papers, that's a character. I mean, and you might see that person or character a couple of times. So that's a decision. Do we cast real people for, which I'm in favor of, or do you make them completely digital characters? I don't know. I mean, these are all decisions that need to be made, and I haven't made them all. And it's going to take a team of people, and there's going to be a lot of factors that determine it. Time, budget, all these different things. These are the nuts and bolts of the production that need to be getting into that I can't really start digging into all the way until I get there. And because this is a film project and it's based around a lot of technology that's new and in development, it's like a moving target. You know, I can give you an estimate today of the way I would do it, but tomorrow it's going to be different, and a year from now it's going to be different, you know, because I have to stay on top of that moving target. And so it's really hard to say until I get to a place where I'm ready to start production what the exact methods would be or what exactly we'd be doing. But yeah, obviously the first few papers, a lot of the first, you know, part one and part two are largely going to be digital animations.
I want to give out your web address now so that people listening to the podcast can go online and look at what we're talking about here. It's fifthepicalfilms.com. Fifth Epical, not fifth like five, but F-I-F-T-H, fifthepicalfilms.com. And great logo. And you've got some demos up, too. You can also subscribe to a daily newsletter. And you do a lot of writing, and I could tell that you're a very good writer. I want to ask you a question. This is a little off guard, but all those years when you were young, and you were knocking on doors when you were doing what you do as a Jehovah's Witness. Did any of that prepare you for what you're doing now?
But really, I think if anything, if I carry over anything from actually the earlier days of being a Jehovah's Witness when I was young, it's really just the truth. It's like anything else, I guess. It doesn't matter what religion you were in. If you through that found the truth, you know, that's out there, that's real, you know, because there's a lot of truth in the Bible. There's a lot of truth in what people believe, even through their, these evolutionary religions. You know, there's a lot of truth to be found there, and you can find a real connection, you know, by real experiences. That's what religion is, really. So I had a lot of that. A lot of that was real. I had a lot of real experiences when I was young, and those still stick with me. They translate over now. There's not really – I've come to a place now, I guess, where in my mind there's not really any difference. I don't think of myself then as a different, you know, as a different person religiously. It was just – that was just a part of my religious experience, and I consciously maybe thought about it differently because of my surroundings at the time, but now there's no difference. It was just, you know, it was just a religious experience that I had. So
we are talking with Ryan Herring. He is the CEO, the owner, the director, chief bottle washer, as they say, of the Fifth Epical Films. And you've got a major project here. You want to take the first part of the Urantia book and make it come to life on the silver screen, as they say. But I think I get your... I've often thought if you had something like what the History Channel does, but if you had a series that went into the Urantia book, I just found somebody should do that someday. Maybe it would be too soon. Maybe it'd be, you know... But why the first part? Why not, like, something more relatable, like part three of the book?
That's the most common, I guess, second question I get. And it's just, again, it ties back to me to, you know, ideally, if there was an ideal way to do it and time wasn't a factor, I would do the whole thing and put it all out as one. And actually, if you watch the sample video that I did, so I hired a guy to do a little voiceover thing, and I carried over what the Urantia Foundation added to the beginning of the audiobook. As they say, that the Urantia book is published as a whole, the foreword and 196 papers. It's meant to be studied in the relation to the whole and not to be separately studied, each individual part, because taken out of context.
Yeah.
And if you keep it within its context, then meanings are amplified and this sort of thing. And so I put that in there, and I just added it says whether written or heard, and I added whether written, heard, or viewed.
Yeah.
And I, that's the underlying philosophy. You can't break away from that. And it's fine. Like, I don't have any problem with people making piecemeal stuff or videos about the Urantia book or trying to introduce the Urantia book to people. All that is great. That's all great. It has a value. I'm not saying that doesn't have a value, but what I'm trying to do is completely different. I'm simply trying to present what I believe in, is that if I had a choice, okay, if I could give somebody the Urantia book instead of explaining it to them, I would give it to them and have them read it, the whole thing. That would be my number one choice. If I could if I had the choice to introduce the Urantia book to somebody in the ideal way, it would just simply to take myself out of it, to not try to reinterpret it,
yeah,
or filter between it. I believe in the value of each individual's mind and their own personal experience with the unfiltered revelation. They deserve that. People deserve an unfiltered experience with it, not somebody else's reinterpretation.
Right.
Not that those are bad, but what people really crave, what they need, is that the revelation itself, the real thing, all of it, 100%, not changed, not filtered, not reinterpreted.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the underlying principle. And so to start with the beginning, because it's such a long thing, like I said, it needs to be studied in order. You need to start at the beginning and go paper by paper. I really, truly believe that. And I also believe there's a cyclical nature to it. So I believe not only do you need to go to the beginning, but once you get to, you can't even understand the foreword all the way unless you've read the whole book.
Yeah, that's true. A lot of people have trouble with the foreword.
You can't comprehend the foreword unless you've read the whole entire book already. So think about that for a second. You have to read it all on paper, and then you have to read it all in order, and you have to read it again and again and again to really comprehend it. There's a cyclical nature to it in the order, and it's intentional. And I want to preserve that. I believe that people deserve to have it unfiltered. It's their choice. They can do whatever they want. You can start whatever paper you want. I'm not trying to tell people what they should do. But what I want to do is offer people the opportunity to do it in what I believe is the intended way. That's it.
So once again, the fifthepicalfilms.com, and the man behind this project is Ryan Herring, and he's with us today, and his work is good. I've seen from what little I can see. Do you have any directors that you particularly like that you sort of are your mentors?
Oh, sure. I mean, I like a lot of contemporary work that's out there. Really what I like nowadays, I'm really into, is long series television.
Yeah.
You know, because just so for me nowadays, when I watch a film, it's just so unsatisfying because it's so short.
Yeah.
You know, you can't really tell a story in 90 minutes, you know, or even 2 hours. It's hard. I mean, you can tell there are some good ones. I'm not saying there's not good films, but there's just so much more depth and you know, character development, all that story development in long format series. So that's really what I like. I like long format dramatic series. So I like a lot of the big sci-fi series that are out there.
So one
we watched recently, Silo on Apple TV, that was pretty good.
Yeah, my son Tom told me about that one. I'm going to check that out. Listen, I appreciate you coming by, and I hope to have you on again, and we can continue to follow your progress.
Yeah, I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about what I'm doing and rant and rave for a few. So.
No, it's good. You know what? We're all working to move that boulder uphill, you know? So
really wanted to take a shout out personally, to everybody's doing work. Everybody's doing work on all fronts. Everybody's doing a video work, you know, large or small. You know, Gary, David, of course, the big names everybody knows about, but also anybody's out there. You know, there's a lot of people with small channels making videos, making blogs, writing and putting good information out there, encouraging people and just drawing people towards it. So I think that all that work is great and super beneficial. And I just really want to clarify what it is that I'm trying to do, because it is different, I think, from what people assume when they look at it face value, because it's sort of outside the box a little bit. So.
Again, fifthepicalfilms.com to find out more. I want to thank Ryan Herring for joining me on the Urantia Radio podcast. Coming up next, we'll delve into papers 70 and 71 and the state of our government from the viewpoint of the revelators. And if you want to reach me on any topic or question you have about this podcast or about the Urantia Book, best way is by email, urantiabookradio@gmail.com, urantiabookradio@gmail.com. Thanks again for stopping by, and we'll see you again soon. God bless.